Have you ever felt surprised or unprepared when things change in the world of social media? We felt the same way. We were tired of reacting to constant changes in marketing, algorithms, and consumer behavior, so we found a better way. Scan Club has been our secret weapon for over a year now, and we're excited to finally be sharing it with you. This approach has helped us future-proof our strategies and feel less reactive. It's not a crystal ball and it doesn't allow us to predict everything, but it's helped us level up our work and collaborate more than ever before. So how does it work? Twice a month, you'll get a copy of Scan Club right to your inbox. It's our breakdown of the top signals we're watching and why they matter. You'll learn to spot these signals, understand their impact, and produce your content with confidence. Get the feature in your inbox. Click the link in our description to subscribe today.
I think if there is any constant throughout the last 20 years, it's the absolute necessity to learn and evolve. Not just with AI, with anything when it comes to marketing.
Welcome back to Waves, powered by Arcade, a show for marketers, creators, and entrepreneurs who want to stop chasing the tide and start making waves online. We're your hosts, Mike and Mitzi, and today we're joined by AI expert and strategist, Maria Osipova.
Known for building exceptional digital experiences that deliver customer value, Maria joined Penny AI to create a brand that allows every social entrepreneur to succeed, grow their business, and create a happy, well-balanced life. Now that has expanded into a new influencer commerce platform, Trend.io, that is making waves in the social commerce space. Having spent over 20 years driving growth in tech and SaaS businesses, Maria is known for building high-performing teams, creating exceptional customer journeys, and leveraging the latest technologies to drive growth and competitive differentiation. Maria partnered with Gigantic IS to create a course on artificial intelligence for marketing leaders, focused on insights, strategy, and specific applications of AI across multiple marketing disciplines. Maria, we're so excited to have you and talk about AI in this episode. Thanks for joining us.
It's so good to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And what an intro. Thank you for getting through that.
It's a very impressive intro. So
quite the resume.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're pumped for this because we consider ourselves aware of AI and we've kind of tested integrating it into some of our workflows at our agency. I use ChatGPT a bit, but I wouldn't say we're experts, you know? So I think likely it's similar with our listeners and viewers as well. There may be a couple experts in the mix, but I'm assuming everyone's kind of still in that testing and learning phase. So being able to speak right to an expert on the topic is really exciting for us.
Yeah, anyone that says they're a true expert in AI, you know, we're at such an early, early stage. You can experiment and you can dive deep into this, but no one is an absolute expert. And if they say this yesterday, today, you're out of date. So, you know, it's keeping up with it. And I appreciate the title, but keep it with the grain of salt as well.
Yeah, well, we appreciate the humility, but I'm sure it's going to be great. Let's rewind a little bit. Can you set the scene for us and just let us know how you got into the marketing industry in the first place and then bring it more to what piqued your interest specifically into artificial intelligence?
Absolutely. First of all, I love marketing. And some people had their kind of turnaround careers. They were engineers and then they became famous marketers. Not me. I started right away in university in the very early years, right, in the consumer behavior psychology. And then I was lucky to get into the internship program at a company that's right now acquired by SAP. So I got my first kind of flavor and feel of tech marketing. And then for the next 20 years, I just moved through kind of every facet of marketing, usually related to the revenue generation. So be it demand gen, operations, any type of branding and content area. So I pretty much went through every cycle within the marketing career. And then in the last 5 to 7 years, I would say I took on running the brand and took on leadership positions within some very high growth startups. And that's where I totally got the feel of operating the whole team and being part of the executive team. But all along, it's been an exciting, fantastic ride. And all along, technology had been part of anything that I had done. I had had a couple of the operations and operations management roles, specifically within MarTech. And actually, my very first job, I was almost thrown into technology because I had this little bit of having Salesforce implementation on my resume. And really, it was like data entry into Salesforce. And then the first company had Salesforce implemented, saw this on my resume, connected the dots. There you go. Thank God it was somewhat of a smaller company. But since then, I kind of had a feel of anything that's technology, I can take on and figure it out if I could figure it out in my first job. Yeah, and that's I think that's the second part of your question where AI came in, right? So I went through several shifts since when I started. Marketing automation was one of the coolest things when I was in my first few years. And that added so much more efficiencies and kind of changed how we operate email and website marketing. And then we've seen social media introduction. And right now, we're seeing another shift, but at a totally different scale. This doesn't even compare, right? And in terms of the facets of marketing that it impacts, and in terms of speed and velocity, something I touched on earlier as well, we have never seen the pace of all of the extensions of all of the apps within, again, across all of the different marketing disciplines. So it is incredibly fascinating. I can see the impact it's going to have on myself, on the team, and you just can't stay behind. So you can as well, you know, join it and lead it as I did with the gigantic course, which is fantastic. And I've learned so much through the process in addition to some of the implementation experience that I've had.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a big reason why we wanted to have you on the show, because of that course that was so interesting. And there's so much talk about AI in marketing right now. I mean, there's talk about AI in every industry, but you know, for the purpose of this conversation, we're going to talk about how it applies to marketing and what people should be really paying attention to, because like you mentioned, it's changing so fast. And I think that like, especially for me, as someone who doesn't know that much about AI, there might be a misconception of what AI actually means. So maybe, do you want to break it down like from the bare bones? When people say the term AI, what are they actually talking about?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And just like you said, everyone talks up the hype around AI but really AI is an umbrella term, right? It's artificial intelligence technologies. It's as generic as saying marketing technologies. Right, just even in our previous conversation, I just mentioned marketing automation, maybe ABM, maybe social media. All of this is marketing technologies with a very different profile, with a very different application, with a very different understanding. So saying AI changes the world is like saying marketing technologies will have this amazing impact. Doesn't tell you anything about how to use them. So that's why anyone that hears this has to understand that it applies to the ability of technologies or solutions to learn, to act intelligently, and to get better. Mm-hmm. So any type of, again, specific narrow application, it doesn't follow the same algorithm. It changes the algorithm based on some of the inputs. And then as a result, either of good inputs or bad inputs, it learns. That's why there is such a huge dependency on the human as well, that it can learn the wrong things. It can multiply the bias, but it's this ability through multiple very, you know, technology deep kind of solutions that enable it. But us as users, that's what we have to remember. It learns. It has to be taught. It has to be given data to learn. It doesn't learn on its own. It doesn't learn in vacuum at all, zero. And then it produces the output that changes over time and learns over time. And again, we have an input on making that learning better.
Right. So I know we're going to get into more of the nitty-gritty of like how to use and integrate AI, knowing that, you know, it's something that you have to feed as it learns and it can make things better. But I just want to, at the top of this, want to clear up the big question that I'm sure is on everyone's mind. Will AI replace marketers? Where we are right now, do you think it will?
It's a great question. And it will only replace marketers that are not using AI for their job, right? Just like if you were thinking 20 years ago, will internet replace marketers? Well, anyone that doesn't have a website right now, it's pretty outdated and not running their business. Anyone that's still spending time templating their SEO over and over again, that can be done in 1 second. Anyone that's not using AI for research or brainstorming will have the narrow input as well and will be outdone and outcompeted by someone that does. So whoever is using this for their efficiencies, for their creativity, will stay and will do their job better. So it's kind of like, will good marketers replace bad marketers, yes. And the good marketers will learn this technology as we always, always did. I think if there is any constant throughout the last 20 years, it's the absolute necessity to learn and evolve. Not just with AI, with anything when it comes to marketing. And this is just this quantum shift that if you are not part of it, yeah.
You will be replaced. Love it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you make a great point that it's important to integrate it so that we're not left behind. But also it can improve our workflow, add efficiency, streamline things. I'm curious from your perspective, because I have my own, but what different types of AI would you say are most relevant to the typical person, but even for the purpose of this conversation for marketers today?
Yeah. So as almost in anything with marketing, it depends as an answer. And the couple things of it depends is, first of all, within your organization. Is this an organization-wide strategy? Do you have access to enterprise AI? And that means a lot of technologies under the umbrella. This could be machine learning, deep learning. This could be any type of language generation or language processing. Whatever happens to be that your company decided to invest in, do you have access to that? And that's kind of the enterprise level. Some companies do, especially in the e-commerce and B2C space. That had been already going on for years, right? But what if you don't? What if you're a B2B and don't have access to it? Then you're evaluating the platforms and some of the technologies like ChatGPT, like generative AI, that are available, that are within the reach, that might have a lot less investment at the company level, you know, just a general subscription. And from that perspective, again, what is the goal and what is the first strategy? Is it your industry is low and retaining customers is the key thing for you? Well, in that case, I would be looking at churn reduction and at anything that has to do with the analysis, predictive and prescriptive parts. Predictive and prescriptive are some of the kind of core AI terms as well. And one has to do with analyzing and knowing what to do, analyzing what happens and when to act. Another one is what to do when acting. And this can be applied to churn, can also be applied to pipeline and to lead generation. And that's some of the kind of very core of AI technology capabilities. Or you have this huge need for content and media, and you're going to apply to content creation because that's your thing. SEO is huge for you for discoverability, and you only have two writers. But they're great at what they do and great at their expertise. You're going to all of a sudden quadruple their output and improve the quality of their research and brainstorming. And that's your first application. So again, there is so many facets to different applications of marketing. So it's really important to know. And that's why kind of the course is built that way. There is a general application, but then it goes into each discipline because each one of them has specific ability to increase efficiency or to leverage the technologies for a specific reason, as opposed to just like general AI magic, right?
One quick question, just this might be a dumb question, but what do you mean when you say generative AI?
Oh, that's a great question. So first of all, that's why we're hearing so much about AI right now. And ChatGPT is a great example, but there is way more than that. But that's the answer is pretty much in the generative part. It's something that synthesizes either content or media or video using the whole bunch of generative technologies underneath. There is still machine learning, there is still language processing, there is still language generation to get the input of what the people are expecting to get out of it and then to provide the output. And again, I'm not going to go into Markov chains and others, but it's this generation and synthesis of an output that is an intention of it. And when we talk about predictive, it's an insights and analysis and alerts. Or prescriptive, it's the insight on what can be done as a next action.
Amazing.
Does it answer the question more or less?
Yes, that's helpful.
Yeah, you're really making it plain for us. This is awesome. So we talked about what generative means. We talked about predictive versus prescriptive and just various use cases, and you even use the term disciplines. In the scope of all of that, what industries from your perspective are most likely to benefit from advancements in generative AI?
I wouldn't claim my own perspective because I think I only have like a scope of knowledge within marketing and tech, but I had been doing a lot of research and preparation for the course and this conversation as well. And McKinsey is someone that I usually trust within kind of the analytics. And they're looking in terms of industries into media. We're talking content creation, you know, a totally different scale, into marketing and sales. something that, again, leaves off generation of content, media, conversations en masse, personalized conversation, personalization at scale. Finance and healthcare, and that's some of the operational improvements because they have so much complexity and so much kind of general knowledge and information created and not always utilized. There is a huge potential to utilize it, break it down, and turn it into more of the human terms. And then when it comes to roles, it's marketing, sales, it's engineering, and dev, because again, there's huge efficiencies in developing code and writing code. And the last one was, I believe, data and operations, just because again, there is a predictive and insights that are looked at multiple levels and patterns with artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think we've seen firsthand the possibilities in the media space because that's our world. But it's interesting to hear even that it could span industries like healthcare and stuff like that too. I think anyone that keeps up with just the general media understands, even if they don't use AI that much, that there are certainly current limits to its abilities and even to its access to information and stuff like that. But I feel like that's all we, the general person, really understands. Can you break it down for us and help us better understand what limits actually exist?
Yeah, absolutely. And some people don't even know that even with ChatGPT, the information input is up until 2021. So if anything, and you're using ChatGPT for facts or for competitive intelligence or anything, just know that it's 2 years older. There is ways around it, such as extensions and then being able to get through Bing to the actual internet. But again, that's been paused and shut down right now. So those are like some of the basics, if anything. Then going back to data. Whenever you're leveraging either generative or ChatGPT to get facts, check and double check and triple check. If you publish something that's been researched through ChatGPT and there are already law cases against this, you are still responsible for making sure it's true. And there is tons and tons of examples where the very true-sounding facts are generated by ChatGPT that have nothing to do with truth. Even if you ask for references and resources, try clicking on those resources. They do not exist. And they are generated as like, this is an expert. This is the perfectly great-sounding resource. No. So be very careful about using that for actual factual research as opposed to idea generation or as opposed to asking about two types of, let's say, opinions that exist. And anything that's been created is not a unique opinion. It's someone's previously stated and recorded opinion. So all of the sources that go into ChatGPT, they include so much of the libraries, but it's the whole blogosphere. So anyone with any type of biases, ideas, outdated, completely not correct ideas can be created for your specific content. And then unless you are totally agreeing, validated it, and fact-checked it, then it becomes your opinion. And that's where we have to be careful.
Right. I have heard of that. And I've also heard some people say that you can then either use a actual like rephraser tool or ask ChatGPT to rephrase the content that it gives you. And that kind of makes it original. Would you agree with that? Or
There is deeper? Very few original. It's only generates an input from what's already there.
Interesting.
It can. So the part to make it original is to use ChatGPT as the first draft and then go with the very, very heavy edit with all of the fact validations and checks like you would as an editorial at a magazine or a newspaper for an article, and then make it yours by rewriting the parts, by completely being like one for one with the opinion that's stated. If then that mm-hmm. becomes your opinion that you totally agree, then yes, then it becomes kind of yours researched opinions. And even then, there is still ethics and copyright opinions that are being figured out as we speak. Because again, there is almost, it's synthesized. So, you know, putting together items of existing materials somewhat makes it unique. But none of those ideas have been created with some type of intention mm-hmm. in a way, right? It's synthesis.
That makes a lot of sense. One way that I've found it to be really helpful is actually with these podcast interviews that we're doing. I'll often take the transcript afterwards and then pick a few sections from the transcript that I thought were really meaningful dialogue. And then I'll work with ChatGPT to help me translate that into a thread for Twitter or a LinkedIn post that I can attribute to the guest and the conversation. But I'm curious from your perspective, what other opportunities does generative AI create for marketers or even specifically in the context of content creation?
So two sides to the answer for marketers. There's application to almost every stage of the funnel that we run with, from the initial awareness and content creation at that stage. So brainstorming, ideation, even the plugins within ChatGPT that pretty much turn a question into the mind map. It's great. It's something that can take your idea beyond, you know, the two or three takes that you and your team can discuss and give you opportunities to refine it. To finding some of the resources and maybe experts, not the exact resource, but just asking who is an expert in that area, again, can take you beyond just a general internet search. Then content creation, obviously. I would never go and say, create the full report on such and such. Actually, there are some best practices that suggest it. What I would suggest is having a very clearly outlined either agenda or table of contents, and then going pretty much section by section for the first draft, and then deeper refining, then using the ChatGPT with more clarifying questions and case studies to build it out. But it dramatically, like if you've ever done an ebook for 20, 30, 40 pages, to have the exact ideas and then to fill them out and explain them, this is such a fantastic start. Then again, expect 3 to 4 to 5 heavy edits. Expect to run it by your own subject matter experts. But you have so much more to start with than a poor writer has to look at the white blank page and, you know, start from nothing. So this kind of first draft generation, fantastic. Some of the prompts that are able to take on a brand voice or a persona of someone with an expertise or a layman also changes it dramatically. Sometimes it's really hard to keep the voices separately. And again, it can give you a very good start. Pretty much starting a prompt is pretend you are a chief marketing officer at a company or pretend you are a first year university student or high school something student. And then you will get a very similar topics in a very different voice and complexity overall. And then we talk about the possibilities of not just ChatGPT, but AI overall in personalization. So you can combine a list of spreadsheet and customer information or company information and ask to apply this specific messaging and make it unique to those companies. Emails, I'm sure everyone's using it for emails, saves endless amount of time just within those applications, right? So
yeah, I really appreciate the practical applications of this because I think sometimes as someone who's maybe a bit intimidated by this subject, it can be hard to kind of think about the practical. And I know there's lots of talks around the ethical, but the practical like really helps kind of make it more clear for me. And I had a question around like how leaders can support their teams and using AI tools. I know we've talked about improving efficiencies and like supporting team members with like coming up with idea generation, things like that. Are there any tools or platforms that you're seeing that are the best way for teams to jump into this right now that maybe are better than others out there?
From the leadership perspective, I wouldn't say a platform is a solution. I would say a general approach to like a mindset of constant learning and appreciating and supporting the type of learning, from my perspective, is a much stronger approach because my designer might need a totally different level or platform for AI experimentation and testing than my content writer, than my SEO specialist. And putting them all on a single platform to experiment, unless it's some type of a communication or, I don't know, project management, would not necessarily drive the point. What I would suggest to do as a leader, especially if you're running some type of cadence such as quarterly goals or whatever your term goals might be, in addition to your performance metrics or KPIs, adding a learning goal, and especially right now, a tiny thing around AI. This could be as simple as an AI-related webinar in their area, or this can be just find a tool and test it. And you know, it's totally okay to spend an hour a day testing it in your area, or follow a LinkedIn expert around AI, but make it a process with the specific outcome and with the accountability, maybe even back to the team. So this is your quarterly goal. The output is not just to go to a webinar and drink coffee and sleep through it, but then presents just a couple findings. Maybe in Slack as the bullet points back to your team, and that checks off your quarterly goal, and then you go into the next one, maybe with the application. When we talk about being apprehensive or scared of taking on AI, it's doing those small steps. Even after listening to one or two webinars, you will feel so much more in control of the theme and just having the understanding, because all we hear is we're bombarded with AI and how it's going to take the jobs and, you know, do magical things. Small step-by-step learnings will do wonder. And as a leader, that's the first thing I would implement. And the next thing would be making sure that as a company, we're comfortable of using AI and we have some controls and rules around AI. So never any of the customer personal information goes into ChatGPT, even as an example, because all of a sudden it becomes part of the overall learning domain and can pop up in another synthesis potentially, right? Or there are certain applications that we're going to pay for as a company because we do want to leverage personal or proprietary information, and we want to ensure that this stays with us. A lot has to do with code, let's say, or developers. We are paying for AI type of tools, and they're personal to our enterprise or our company. So things like that, I would say. And lead and be the first one to, you know, take a webinar and share some of the findings.
Yeah, or take your course. That's probably the best way to do
it. Yeah, that's that's a perfect idea as well. It is for marketing leaders. So
totally, yeah. Now, and we've talked about content production a little bit already, but for a lot of people who are listening, they likely are in that content space or work in social media. What would you recommend as like the tools or the first things they should do if they want to start integrating generative AI into their process?
That's a great question. And again, the tools depend on really like on the volume or on the type of content or even the specialization. Jasper AI is one of the tools that I've heard a lot about. I haven't personally used it, but I have been on several of their webinars, and it's generic enough where this could be a very wide application. ChatGPT and prompts, again, is another obvious one, and then taking it to some of the plugins that are specific to your area would be the next. I wouldn't go through the entire platform on that. I would pretty much stick with those, and then going through the vendor evaluation and understanding what's specific to you. Are you looking into SEO optimization more than anything as part of the content? Because, or are you looking at more of the Google or Microsoft driven tools, and that's kind of part of your stack and you're able to connect them. So those types of decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. We had initially rolled out Jasper for our team, and it was pretty good. I personally feel like I lean more towards ChatGPT Plus since I've been trying that one instead. And I feel like we might end up rolling that out to the team instead of Jasper. But I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned earlier, I think it was specifically about ChatGPT, about plugins that you can use. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about the plugins available and even how to find them or what you can use them for?
Yeah, absolutely. So ChatGPT is a very generic application, right? And it's a pretty much just the interaction between the input chat tool and then the output is just the text. Plain text. So the plugins take you beyond that capability. However, there is still an integration that exists with the ChatGPT. So the input is still through your line, but the output can be different depending on the application. And the one I'm blanking out on the names, but the couple ones I've experimented with were the brainstorming applications where it's just this mind map is coming out in addition to just listing, you know, point by point the ideas. It comes up into clusters. Another one is the Bing extension that takes you beyond the 2021 limitation of ChatGPT and opens up the free internet access. Again, this is paused right now, but it's definitely going to go forward. And then it's pretty much being built out as the App Store right now. There is a specific setup through the settings. Depending on when you join ChatGPT and whether you have the paid version, it's either enabled to you or not on the specific solutions. And then it's the same type of search on the applications, and it's trial and error, you know, of figuring out or being able to follow like newsletters or things that you see. It's like, oh, that's the extension that I think I need. And then pretty much going there. But it extends exactly as it says, the capability of ChatGPT into domains outside of just the text output.
I'm excited to do some research on that. And we alluded a little bit to what makes a good prompt. You mentioned even like pretend you're a CMO at a big company or whatever. Can you break out prompts a little bit more? Like what are some other angles to go at prompts for a platform like ChatGPT or Jasper? Any tips that you have, low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the best ways to think about it is treating it as a campaign scope or a scenario as opposed to like a day-to-day conversation. It's not coming up to a specialist and say, oh, write this blog post for me. It's actually treating it as the subsets of exactly what you're looking for. So a good example, and keeping the templates of the ones that are successful. So one example that I really like is create and then the type of content, you know, in brackets that you're replacing and you're building that as a template, the tone, the specific tone, and have almost like the selection of tones that you've used or something that's specific to your brand. Then audience, describe in details the audience. Then goal, is this awareness? Is this conversion? Is this education? Or the purpose? The length. Exact length, because otherwise you will get endless response from ChatGPT. Yeah. Likes the long form for whatever reason. So literally a prompt for your content creation that outlines those things line by line. Don't even try to put it into the sentence. Put it into the specific prerequisites. And the quality of the output will be drastically different than just write me a blog post about blah. Mm-hmm. And if you want to add, like write it as a Nike copywriter, you will see some really cool, like inspirational twists on it. And if you say write it as an Apple copywriter, the same. It's pretty amazing how it can change the tone of voice or adopt the personas based on this. So that's one example. Another one is actually using the formulas. And I'll share a couple of the examples later. But it's giving it almost like an algorithm of following. So I'm working on... again, in brackets, this decision. Give me step-by-step solutions that include this type of output. So it's almost thinking about it more in formulas than in this nice conversation where we say please and thank you at the end. I don't know if you do that with ChatGPT. I sometimes do. But it's changing the mindset into a lot more of the algorithmic writing. And I believe that changes the quality output drastically.
100%. I even saw, I think this was a conversation on Twitter, but someone was recommending, even after you give all this information and context and prompts to ChatGPT or whatever platform you're using, it's worth asking if it would have any follow-up questions for you to fill in the blanks before it generates a response. I've been trying that a little bit, and it seems to be pretty productive as well.
Yeah, refining is so, so critical. Like, never take the first output. Like, look through it and ask for it to be shorter, ask for it to be give you a couple more versions, or change the tone of voice, make it more educational. Whatever that happens to be, like, treat it as a first draft that is to be refined next. And then some of the scenarios that you've asked about earlier as well, it's the learning part of ChatGPT is pretty impressive as well. And ask how to learn about a concept in the fastest way, right? Explain to me this concept in the 3 sentences, or describe to me this book. What does it talk about? That's actually been one of the most fascinating things about books are part of the ChatGPT learning data. And you can ask about anything that's been published before 2021 and ask for the Coles Notes summary of what it is on marketing, on anything. Yeah, amazing. And then ask for, if you want to become an expert in such and such area, what is the best way to approach it? Build a learning path.
Wow.
These types of things. That is pretty cool. Decision making. I'm trying to make a decision about this. Give me pros and cons and give me the resources and potential impact. I'm trying to learn this. Give me the step-by-step implementation if I were to actually make it, you know, real. And if it goes too generically, which ChatGPT always tries to give you like the generic fluff first. It's like, literally, no, I was asking for specific step-by-step actionable steps, and you can reduce it for like a small business with little budget with this type of tools. Otherwise, it will spit out Amazon and IBM and all of the big names.
Yeah. What? Wow, that's such interesting use case.
Yeah.
Beyond the risk of like plagiarism, because we know that this is a lot of the synthesis is coming from actual content online, like you talked about. What are any other potential risks that we're facing right now when using generative AI?
Bias is something that we've already talked about, right? If you introduce the data with bias, it will multiply the bias. Data that hadn't been cleaned or cleared properly, especially if it's within the enterprise context, will screw up the rest of it. It's kind of like CRM, bad data in, bad data out. Personal information is huge. You know, anything that has to do with the customer data or anything that can be identifiable, especially in healthcare or sciences or education for that matter. And chatbots and support. Chatbots are a huge part of it because the data that's fed into them is customer conversations. So being able to make sure that it's anonymized and then anyone that's been adding to the data had been made aware through some type of information release that their data is anonymized and is used for this kind of chatbot going forward, that has to be done. And then there is so much legal that's still unknown. So keeping on top, as if you're head of operations, if you're head of legal at the organization, you have to be aware of all types of usages of AI, either within your solution or within your company, because you might be not able to operate in Europe because of the restrictions. So just being very clear about what part of information is exposed is really important. And if your operations are global, finding solutions. I literally just read about a specific generative AI competitor to ChatGPT that is compliant with the latest EU rules. And then, you know, you might be more inclined to use them as opposed to ChatGPT, which isn't. And I'm sure there is tons more. I'm by no means like an ethics expert, but those are the first few that come to mind.
Yeah. And I think it's really great to hear you talk about that, because in my perspective, as someone who hasn't really done a lot of research into AI and just feels overwhelmed and intimidated by the subject matter, because a lot of what I'm hearing is all these issues and ethics and things like that, which when you break it down, like in this conversation, it just feels so much more like helpful. Like it's almost like a resource and less of like this bigger decision about how you, you know, interact in digital spaces. So I appreciate you kind of like breaking that down and making it so practical. But if anyone's listening and maybe they're still hesitant or scared about trying their, like exploring AI and seeing how it can impact their work, what would you say to those people? And like, how could you maybe support them or give them advice?
First of all, it's nothing to be scared about, even though just intelligence or AI sounds like out of sci-fi, but think about it as more tech stack, right? It's just general marketing technologies. And then under the huge umbrella of technologies, there are some smaller applications and some smaller tools. And by the way, we've been using artificial intelligence under the hood of most of the marketing tech for years now. We just weren't exposed to this easy conversation with it through the chat line, right? We've been using it. That person might probably, if they've done anything for SEO, if they've looked at Google Analytics, if they've done anything for content, probably had elements of AI already being there. So now it's identifying the smallest use case possible and finding, you know, the either the solution or experimentation path that doesn't necessarily go straight to like a high volume of customers. It's really the experimentation. It's slicing the tiniest, smallest slice that you're comfortable with and then trying to apply it. And then maybe, again, even the simplest webinar at the Basics Marketing AI Institute. There is, you know, the course that I am teaching. There is so much information available, is starting with one. And every time, like I was taking on the Salesforce CRM or any type of the first implementations of either account-based or marketing automation, it's taking a single resource, you know, and finding maybe the authority within the space. Right now, the same person that had been John Miller, so he was right behind, you know, the Marketo and kind of any type of marketing automation information. Now he talks about AI as well and breaks it down and talks about marketing applications. Sticking with one person, like not trying to curate like the whole thousand of resources that feels really overwhelming, but finding the person that you trust and just watching them and reading the things that they're publishing around the topic. And then I think that makes it much more digestible. And again, applying, if you just read about it, your head goes crazy. Applying it even to the smallest examples, I think it's that's where you start feeling the your own capability. Like that, there, this is nothing scary. It's like you got the output of text, own it. Like just because AI spit it out means nothing. If you're confident in every part of that statement, you're happy with it, you could have written it, that's what you can publish, wherever it came from. Even either it's your intern, either it's your outsourced part, or either it's AI that produced it, you still own it at the end. So as long as you're happy and comfortable and know that this would satisfy your customers and your audience, yeah, then there you go.
Yeah, I think it's always been all around us, or not always, but for a long time now, it's been all around us. I even think of predictive text on iMessage or even in Gmail or spelling and grammar, like the tool Grammarly. Many of us use that, and that's AI driven too. So I'm curious, this wasn't a planned question, but when you think of AI and kind of the world that's in front of us, where we're about to go with it, what gets you most excited?
Just the capabilities and things that are left to us to explore outside of AI. That there is so much more to creativity. Or almost, you know, sometimes you're thinking, it's like, oh, I don't have anyone to brainstorm it with. I wish there was like this person next to me that I could just, you know, go back and forth. And you actually can do that with AI. It's kind of this expansion of my own brain and capability, that it's not just a solution that will make like my strategy more efficient, but it has the potential to make my brain and my creativity more efficient and more scalable and has a greater reach. So I don't look at it as a threat. I look at it as an expansion of what can I think about and what I can accomplish more than anything. And I think that's the cool part. And that's what's going to permeate more and more.
I love it. Yeah, that's such a great, that's like inspiring, honestly, like to think about the capabilities. You've kind of mentioned some people that you read and follow, and I'm curious and I'm excited to ask you this question. And we ask all of our guests this question: who is making waves right now and why?
I think Bernard Marr is one of the futurists and keynote speaker on AI. And I curate a lot of AI newsletters and podcasts and things like that. And I think this is one of the more reliable, not just within marketing overall, but within kind of the general AI space. And the information is easily accessible as a LinkedIn post or a newsletter. So I would say him, because otherwise there could be like tons. But if I were to focus on one, that's a pretty good source to follow and then to, you know, go off to the links and suggestions that he has within newsletters. There are some prompt conversations, there are some industry conversations, there is a touch on marketing, and it's very consistent too. So
love it. I'm gonna go subscribe. Sounds Same. Great. And our last question here, where can listeners connect with you?
Absolutely. So LinkedIn, Maria Osipova, CMO with Penny AI. I welcome everyone to reach out and connect. And then, yeah, I'm at Penny AI at Trend. And if you're interested in checking out the gigantic course, it's the Marketing AI Strategy. It's not just myself. There are several facilitators in addition to me, someone that's very deep dive level of knowledge into data and information, the CEO of an AI agency. And then there is the separate course on advertising deep dive as well. And there is an ethics component, I believe, that's done by legal. So that's where I was saying, it's like, oh, not my expertise, but it is part of the course. So that's Gigantic IS. And then Marketing AI Strategy is the course.
Amazing. Yeah, we'll make sure to include some info on the course in our show notes. But thank you so much, Maria. We were really hoping that this would be an episode and a conversation that would just essentially demystify AI for marketers. And I really feel like we accomplished that together. So thank you for joining us and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure. And I'm so happy that this conversation has been started. So that's fantastic to be here.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to Waves. If you enjoyed this episode, you can hit subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow along on social at Hello Arcade. We'll see you next time.